All right. Yeah, we're back, guys.
Okay.
I honestly can't tell you what's happened here. It's going to take me all day tomorrow to figure it out before Wednesday. But getting back to what I was saying, Dan, we were talking about hypnotherapy, and you were about to see about giving us an example with Tamara, correct?
The example I wanted to give is of meridian-based therapy.
Oh, okay.
This doesn't work on me.
where you can pick anything, Tamara, that makes you uptight or uncomfortable.
Screaming children in restaurants?
Okay.
Something like that or something.
Okay. So if you think of being in a restaurant and there's a screaming child right next to you and you have an important meeting in this restaurant, Can you feel some of the discomfort?
Oh, yeah, today. It wasn't an important meeting, but an expensive lunch ruined by screaming children that make you cringe.
Okay. So if you think about it right now, do you still feel some of that?
No, I'm aware of it, but I don't really feel it.
Okay. So what I'd like to suggest is, can you think of something that actually would make you uncomfortable right now when you think about it? It could be spiders or mice or heights or, I don't know.
It could be, I can't say that on the air. My collaborator knows what I'm talking about. I can think of something. I really have never understood why I don't like to be around dogs much. I'm not afraid of them. I don't like to be around them for long. I start getting very irritated with them.
Okay.
And I can draw that right up.
So if you think about being around a dog right now.
Yeah, one that's staring at me and won't leave me alone.
Right.
Okay. Yeah,
if, I can. And if 10 is the worst you could feel right now, thinking about it, and 0, it doesn't bother you at all, what number is it right now?
Probably about 5 or 6.
Okay. Now, Ed, you don't have any dogs there, do you?
No. Go ahead. Well, actually, they're outside, but go ahead.
Okay.
I like other people's dogs for short periods of time.
Right. So there's really no dog there now, Tamara, but you're still feeling a level 5 out of 10 discomfort just thinking about it.
Yeah, I know how I'll react if I'm around it for long. It makes me uneasy.
Okay. And that uneasiness is just a number that you're doing on yourself out of habit. So you bring up the memory or the image of a dog, and that discomfort comes on.
Yeah, when they get, I see them getting in my face and breathing
right
on me and licking me. That's okay for my husband, but not for, a dog.
Okay. So would you like to let go of some of that?
Yeah, since my best friend is a dog lover like I'm a cat lover.
Okay. So if you take, Renate, lifting one finger and then the other and, touching.
More grossed out.
Okay. Even though I feel grossed out.
Even though I feel grossed out.
When I picture, and say what you're picturing.
When I picture a dog trying to get in my face, and staring at me.
I still love and accept myself.
I still love and accept myself.
Wholly and completely.
Wholly and completely.
And would you feel comfortable saying, God loves me and accepts me?
The Tao.
Okay. And
I'm part of the Tao.
I'm part of the Tao.
Okay. I'm part of the Tao.
Okay. And you take a nice deep breath.
Mm-hmm.
And are you still tapping like that?
Mm-hmm.
Good. And then you pause and you ask yourself, okay, now what number is it?
It's probably down around a 2.
Wow, you're sensitive. Some
people
can only make it come down like one notch at a time.
That just started seeming silly.
So if you keep doing that, you can bring it all the way down to 0.
Huh. I'll try that next time she wants me to come to her house.
Okay.
For lunch.
But this is only the first part, and this is the easier part.
Okay.
The second part is to reprogram your mind to put in a positive to replace the negative.
Okay.
And you do that after you bring the negative down to 0, and then you think of something like, and I'm not prescribing this, I'm just suggesting a possibility. You know, you have to come up with your own image and words. But you could say, I can have a dog in front of me that's getting in my face, and I'll feel comfortable. You don't say, I won't feel something, because that doesn't work. You say the actual positive feeling.
Yeah, the glass is half full. But
yeah.
I always think in those terms.
And you might start out saying, oh, I believe that about a 2, you know, or a 3. Mm-hmm. Well, if you do the same thing, you know, you say, I can have a dog in front of me, and I can feel comfortable, and I love and accept myself, and I know I'm a part of the Tao, and in the flow of it, and take a nice deep breath. Well, the positive will get stronger, just like the negative got weaker.
That makes sense. I've come to think that I like cats because they're around, but they only come around wanting a little attention now and then, and then they leave again.
Yeah.
They aren't staring at me all the time, and I'm highly ADD, hence I'm highly irritable.
Okay.
And I lose track of what I'm thinking about, you know, mid-sentence half the time. And, you know, so dogs, they stare at me very expectantly. They want things.
Yeah.
And the cats, you know, hey, you know, feed me. I like you. I'll leave you alone. I love that.
Well, you know, you remind me when you're talking about the ADD about how I used to be as a medical student and an intern when they would wake me at night. When I was on call, and I would be sleeping maybe half an inch off the bed, just waiting for that phone to ring again.
Oh, our phone's off in the bedroom. It's never on.
But, you know, being on call as a doctor, you know, it wasn't possible to do that.
No.
So, for a number of years, I was festering with that. And then I read about a woman who went to the South Sea Islands to study people who share their dreams at night, and this society has almost no violence. So she went and she lived with them for a little bit, and she was sleeping with them, and they were waking up in the middle of the night, and someone would have a nightmare, and he'd, you know, be all frightened, and they'd comfort him, and someone else would wake up laughing. They had a funny dream, and he'd wake everybody, and everybody would have a good laugh, and then they'd go back to sleep. But she couldn't fall asleep. And she was sitting there just stewing over what she'd gotten herself into, where she couldn't get in a good night's sleep. And after about 2 nights of this, she looked around and she realized that everybody else was sleeping except for her. And yes, they'd wake up, but then they'd go back to sleep.
Well,
and she realized that she was keeping herself awake through being flustered by it.
Oh, that's fascinating.
And if she let go of the festering, then she could just go back to sleep and she'd be fine.
Now, to me, it sounds like we're talking about an issue with tension.
Oh, yeah. And we wind ourselves up often without realizing it. So I was winding myself up over the phone ringing. And I realized that if I just let go of that and just said, you know, good night to whoever called me and didn't fester over it, I'd be letting myself go back to sleep instead of keeping myself awake. But I was always blaming someone else who was calling me, of course.
Yeah. And it just, you could still get enough sleep with your sleep interrupted like that?
Well, I learned to not let it keep me up. I just went back to sleep because I wasn't getting all uptight.
I have the ringer off on my phone. I make people email me. but I'm working, writing, and... But this is a really good point. This rings very true. And it really is your own self that's causing trouble.
Yes. And
well, we're our own worst enemy to begin with. I mean, I think that's a given.
Yeah.
Yeah. I call it the inner critic, but it's the same child, the one that tells you, oh, you're no good, and you know, you can't do this. And you have to tell your inner critic or your inner child to go stuff it and just, go with the flow.
the challenge, though, is to get, you know, your inner child to listen and to let go, because that inner child is going to say to itself, gosh, you know, this has worked for so many years. I'm going to let this habit go? Are you kidding?
Yeah, habits are hardest thing in the world to break.
Yeah, and that's why I love this technique that I call we. W-H-E-E. It's the holistic hybrid of EMDR and EFT. On my website, the Holistic Healing Research website, I've got an article that describes this.
Well, let's go ahead right there, Dan. Go give that web address out also for those who aren't on our website to get here.
It's Holistic, W-H-O-L-I-S-T-I-C, Healing Research, all one word, .com. And at that site, I have a lot of information on healing and self-healing. So if someone is interested in we, they can look under articles, and there's an article on self-healing that describes this. And this gives us a way to reprogram our beliefs and our disbeliefs and our habits so that if we decide we want to change, we can actually make the change.
This is very good.
Yeah, it's a lot of valuable information. In actuality, though, I sit here and think, you know, a lot of this is, well, I guess we'd call it common sense. But it seems like we need to unlearn what we've learned in order to get to where we need to be.
Yes.
Would that be a fair statement?
The common sense is so important. It's important for people when they go to a doctor or a healer of any sort to use their common sense, because no one healer or therapist knows everything or can cure everything. And if it doesn't feel right, if their advice feels like it's really not quite on target, look for someone else. Take what is on target and go to someone else. Doctors tend to think that, you know, you should just stay with one doctor. And that's fine as long as the doctor knows what it is that he needs to do to help you. But no one knows all the answers.
No, and you really have to go looking on your own and make yourself aware of what's out there. And don't buy any dogma in particular. And science is dogma, as you know, Western science, as much as anything.
It's almost a religion.
Oh, it is. And
well, that kind of crosses that line that you mentioned earlier, that we talked about earlier, with the physical and the emotional and the mind and the spiritual all kind of being one and the same, and having to treat all of them in order to accomplish, to solve a problem one way or the other.
You can actually fix a physical problem by fixing your mind. I mean, that's a silly way to put it, but...
Oh, it's not silly at all, Tamara. The we method works for pain. It works for arthritis.
That is such a great name. I'm not going to forget that.
And it works for allergies as well.
Oh, really?
But for allergies, it could take 2 weeks until it grabs hold.
Ah.
Now, as we come down, we've got a little extra time. We've got a few minutes left here tonight. We've got a little overflow here, I'm sure. But I'd like to hear more about what you discussed in your recent editorial there on your website with the journal. Death has a bad reputation, and I'd like to hear a little more about... you know, your thoughts on that and what you mean by that for our listeners who haven't read it yet, or, you know, give them some kind of idea. When they see that headline, they think death has a bad reputation. The first thing I know popped into my head when I saw it was, what is this, a suicide drip or something?
Oh, my goodness, no. When I was in medical school, what I was taught was essentially that if someone had the affront to die under my care, it was probably my fault. And that if they had died under my care, I had to ask, what had I done or not done that might have caused it? So, I was pretty unhappy with that, because one of the things that everybody that I treat is going to have to deal with is dying. And yet I wasn't prepared for it, and I started running into people who were suffering from serious illnesses, people who were bereaved, women who'd had miscarriages, and doctors often are not trained to deal with that. When I got into healing, I found that healers are perfectly comfortable with it because they accept that death is an important part of life. Now, for a healer, a good death is a healing. So not having pain, not having fear, having some awareness of the beyond, some awareness of what can happen across that boundary that we ordinarily think of as final in Western medicine, is very comforting to people.
Sure.
Now, when I started getting into healing, I didn't believe in any of that afterlife stuff. I thought that that was just wishful thinking or fantasies or fear of fatal illness, and so people were wishing that there's something after death. And when healers told me that they were not the ones who were doing the healing, but that it was the spirits who were guiding them, or it was Christ, or it was God, or Buddha, or Allah, or whoever, I said, oh, yes, thank you. You're pushing my boggle threshold a little too far.
Yeah.
But after a while, I kept hearing it again and again. And I started to develop my own healing gifts, and with it came an awareness of being part of something vaster than myself. Something that can guide me, inspire me, can really be a healing presence, even when I don't know what to do.
Well, it seems like when you're in touch with a lot of that to begin with, you stay healthy and you don't really need the healing presence. In and of itself, it seems like that's more of a preventative presence. If you can get to that stage and practice these things more often, you know, you wouldn't need the healing in the first place.
Yes.
Yeah, a little reminder, maybe. I mean, I've got to say, I basically consider myself a Zen atheist, and but that means I can be spiritual without worshiping any deities or believing in them, and this rings completely true. Part of the positive or the energy, the force, whatever you want to call it, the Tao. And this works for people with religion and people with other beliefs or non-beliefs.
Absolutely. People ask me what my religion is. I say I belong to the Church of Personal Spirituality.
Oh, good answer. I like
because I believe that each of us finds the inner knowing that connects us to that all, that presence.
Yeah. Yeah, everyone is part of the same energy flow, and you can tap into the good or the bad, positive or negative, or better words.
Yes.
Hmm.
Doesn't matter what you believe, it's still, or don't believe, it's still there.
Yes.
And you were talking about intent as well, and that's just fascinating. It's amazing how well that works.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a comment in the chat room now. We all need healing at one time or another. And I think what you're talking about tonight, Dan, makes a lot of sense in a lot of ways. When you use the terms, I tend to phrase it personally as body, mind, and spirit, or body, emotion, and spirit. And I think that, yeah, you have to have a total package. You can't have one thing or the other. When you start breaking things down, you really, it's just like the issue on medicine you were talking about earlier, in which you end up treating one thing at one place, one thing in another place, and it takes a while for one doctor to get in touch with the other doctor because they're both so busy. So what happens in the meantime is the patient who's actually sick has to suffer in the meantime. And I think that's the same thing with psychotherapy. What's your draw on that?
I keep coming back, Ed, to my very early realization that came when I saw Abraham Maslow's observation that if all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
I like that.
There are many, many ways to help people, and each person can benefit from help from many different people. There isn't just one way to help a person. One of the things that I'm doing is to work with a group of people on what we're calling the Council for Healing. We're getting together practitioners who are involved in different modalities to share and explore how each of us address different problems so that we can learn more ways to help people, maybe not necessarily ourselves, but if we can't help a person, then we can refer to someone who could help them in the particular way.
Hmm. Well, as we're getting down to it, and I want to give you plenty of leeway here because we got kind of shortchanged there. Which, by the way, that was my own fault. I actually forgot to turn something off. It's why we kept getting cut off. But you have mentioned eye movement desensitization and
reprocessing.
Yeah, can you explain that a little more? What exactly is that, and how does that apply to any of this?
That's a stimulation of the right and the left side of the body again and again. Just like Tamara was using on her eyebrows. The eyebrows are good releasing spots, but if you alternate tapping them one at a time back and forth, you're also stimulating your brain, your right and left side of your brain, as you're doing that.
Would that help with work? I mean, thinking?
I don't know.
Yeah, staring at her computer. It's a healing thing. The stimulation would help almost anything, I would think.
Yes. It releases hurts, it releases negative beliefs, and it also helps to reinstall positives.
And it's not just that this is a habit to replace a bad habit with. This actually increases the possibilities.
Oh, absolutely.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, it seems like it would have the potential here. Seems, and as you combined, as we combined all the stuff we talked earlier, and I keep dredging this up, but it's a central key point, I think, to our discussion tonight. As we combine the physical, the mental, all those aspects, when you do your therapy, it looks like you combine a lot of aspects of other things into one system, the same way that we need to combine those spiritual, physical aspects of ourselves. And is that a safe assumption, Dan?
A lot of what holism about is bringing back together what our Western society has just separated out into subspecialties. And we've gotten so in the habit of thinking in those ways that if I have a physical pain, I'm likely to think it's just my body. But a pain in the neck could be something that's a pain in the neck in my life. Or a pain in my stomach could be something that's in my life that I've swallowed down that I don't know how to digest.
Does this include, when I'm around people that are very prickly in bad moods, even before I hear them, my stomach will get tied up. I know
yes.
They're around, so I leave.
Yes.
Is that the same sort of thing?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought it was. One thing, Western medicine is great if you have appendicitis or a broken leg, and for a lot of other things. And it can be antibiotics can be used in a bad situation, for instance, to fix something. But then following it up with a holistic approach is just vital.
Yeah.
And just going holistic, if you can, is even better, I would think. Is that about right?
Yeah.
Well, look at how many times in history, in and of itself, that prior to surgery and something such as an antibiotic, which I think we way overuse, that's all they had. And you know, if it didn't work, a lot more people would have died, and our population, you know, we probably wouldn't be here right now. We'd have probably killed ourselves off with these things.
Yes.
You know, in my opinion now. But someone in the chat room has made a comment, and I want to give you an opportunity to address this. Actually, we've got a lot of good comment, but this person's mentioning how passive treatment may not be a good therapy at all, and that it's not aggressive enough to treat certain things such as tumors and things like that. But on the flip side of the coin, how would you treat someone with a tumor using psychotherapy? How does that come into play? I notice you speak a lot about cancer and dealing with these patients and dealing with the bereavement, but how do you get someone to deal with the fact that they're about to die?
In Volume 2 of Healing Research, I have a long chapter on many self-healing approaches, including psychoneuroimmunology, where the mind can influence the immune system. Also, where people can deal with pain in different ways, where people can deal with stress and anxiety in different ways. But I'm not here advocating to not use conventional medicine and to not use chemotherapy if that's what feels right to you and that's what research shows could help you. But I'm very much for being holistic in the treatment as well. I learned this from a nurse in England. Do I have enough time, Ed?
Yeah, we get shut off. You roll.
Okay. The nurse works on a chemotherapy unit, and she's an excellent healer, but her boss wouldn't let her use the healing on the unit because it was against the boss's beliefs. She prayed for guidance, and she was guided to give healing to the chemotherapy bottles instead of to the patients. And her patients had no nausea or vomiting or headaches or diarrhea or the rest of it. And so they had the benefit of the chemotherapy and of the healing at the same time.
That's amazing.
And so if people are taking any medication, I encourage them to hold it in their hand and to pray over it as a way of harmonizing it with the body and also gentling the negative effects, the side effects. So it doesn't have to be one or the other. Holism is really about having the best of all worlds.
If I hadn't experienced some of this, I think everything is hooey, and I know this isn't. There are just some things in life, and maybe not in life, that you just have to accept because they happen and there's no explanation. And the mind must be behind most of these things.
Yes. Part of our problem is that we've bought into the belief of modern science that somehow we're going to know everything someday. So we beat ourselves up when we don't know or understand everything. But part of spiritual awareness is that there's a mystery that goes beyond our own knowing. So sort of like my festering over, you know, not being able to sleep because the phone was ringing, I can fester over not knowing everything, or I can say, isn't it wonderful that this mystery that we call life has given me the gift of being here with these other people, and I can be there for them. And if I'm open to it, many times they're actually there also for me, because I'm not through learning my lessons. So many of the clients who come to me actually end up teaching me lessons while I'm helping them find their lessons.
Oh, you're very good then. You lack the arrogance that so many Western, especially, specialists have, that you're holistic to it. I'm making no sense, but
I thank you for the compliment. it has come through working with a lot of really good healers who were excellent models for me. A few of them were also physicians, I have to say.
Well, someone actually told me one time that the best teachers learn are the ones that learn, don't teach their students, but so much as they learn from their students.
Yes.
And I'd have to say, I think that applies here tonight.
It certainly does. And the notion that the mystery is the most wonderful thing, I live by that. You sold me.
It didn't sound like you were a hard sell there, Tamara.
Oh, no, I've been into this for 20 years. But I am I'm very skeptical of things. I wouldn't think this stuff worked if I hadn't experienced it.
Yes. I know very much what you're saying.
Well, as we close this out, Dan, do you have any final comments for our listeners or final words of thought that you'd like to get a point across to our listeners with?
Never give up hope of having an awakening of parts of yourself, of your own awarenesses, that can be wonderful experiences, even in the midst of having difficult times. Life is just an invitation to experience miracles. We forget when we're suffering sometimes that the suffering doesn't have to be all there is. We need to deal with the suffering. I'm not saying to ignore it, but if we can reach into the spiritual part of ourselves, then even the suffering becomes a lesson.
Nothing's wasted.
No.
There you go. Good point. And Tamara, tonight, any final comments or thoughts?
I'd certainly like to have Dan back again. I think I greatly admire this. I'm going to read the books.
Thank you, Tamara, and it's been a pleasure. You're a very good interviewer, and it makes it easy.
Thanks.